there that there is a divine consciousness, something that is innately pure, perfect, the everythingness that you think of as the highest and best of life. That whatever you have done, whatever anyone else has done against you, that that innate purity is never changed, is ever perfect, ever pure. And the moment you turn your mind toward it, it begins to spill its grace upon you and purify you and make you a fit instrument for divine consciousness. To feel that deep in your heart and your soul, to put your attention upon that purity, that light, and let it shine. Let it shine. The Master said, you don't light a candle and put it underneath a bushel or a bush or hide it away. You put it up onto a tabletop. You put it up on to a point of land if it's to keep ships away and keep them safe. You put it where it'll do some good. And you let your light shine. You let it shine for yourself. You let it shine for this world. And so you see that light shining, first of all, within the cavern of your own heart. And the rays of that light go out to every cell of your body. The cells of this body, when it gets into a state of dis-ease, is lacking that light, lacking that purity. And so you see every cell of your body reflecting that light. Like a mirror, so many thousands and thousands and millions of mirrors, all reflecting that light. And that light goes out, and it shines out into this entire room, and it fills this room with that light, with that purity, and everyone in it. And then you go on expanding that light. It goes out into this community. And it shines everywhere, in every cell of creation. Every particle, every aspect of creation has that innate purity within it. And you see it as so many lamps shining that light. And then you go on expanding that light as it fills up this entire nation. And then island nations all around the world join in, manifesting that same light, every person, every particle. And now you see this entire earth has so many billions and billions of lamps, so many lights. And whatever the outward scene, whatever people have done or not done, whatever creation seems to reflect, it has this innate purity in it, and now you see it shining perfect and pure and whole. And it sings to you. And then you go on, expanding out beyond this island planet, to the solar system, to the entire galaxy. And then you see so many tens and hundreds of thousands of galaxies, all as shining lights, all as islands, but they're joined in that light. And your consciousness grows with it. And you feel yourself expanding with that light. Until you see this entire universe as a manifestation of that light. And when God created, He created with light. He said, let there be light. And He painted with a brush all the light that has created everything that is. And then He took rainbows of light And he created all the diversity, but it all comes from the singular light of the origin, of the source. And so you see now an island universe, and so many other island universes. And you can go on even beyond that, but you feel the expansiveness and the freedom of your spirit, no longer confined and contained to a singular human body, but re-identifying itself with its universality. In India, they say, Tat Tvam Asi, I am that. And it's reflected in the Old Testament when God said his name, I am that I am. The great I am, the great spirit, the great being. And you are that in truth and in reality. And then you can refocus your mind upon this body. You can even open your eyes and see these hands, these legs, these feet. See how small you are, contained in this body, and then close your eyes and reunite yourself with that spirit, expansive, free, pure. And how much you long and yearn for that freedom that you can never find in this world and through this body. But by turning the attention within, and then expand out and find your universal self, your divine self. This is your truth. This is your reality. Heavenly Father is that which resides beyond all creation. Divine Mother is that which expresses herself as Mother Nature. The Son of God is that pure light that is sprinkled throughout creation, the firstborn of every creature. And it is your true self. In repeating this prayer from that high state of consciousness, will you pray with me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King,
reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Great joy to be here today. Reading from Papa Ram Dass, Swami Ram Dass, compassion is the noblest virtue. Compassion is the noblest virtue that adorns the heart of a human being. Real peace and contentment can reside only in that heart which feels for the suffering of others. The heart does not stop at being merely touched by the woes of its fellow beings, but it overflows in acts of kindness and love. The heart that feels but does not express itself in selfless action is like a spring dried up at its very source. O friend, if you would have freedom from fear and sorrow and enjoy the supreme blessing of everlasting peace, expand freely your heart so that it may go out in waves of compassion to soothe and alleviate the distress of the world. Whenever a kindly feeling rises in you, let not selfish thought stifle it. If you would realize the endless bliss of immortality, which alone is your real quest, although you are unaware of it, liberate the heart from its hardness by the magic touch of compassion. Life is a short span, and the pleasures you derive in it are transient and fleeting. In pursuing these shadows, you are heading towards darkness and are becoming oblivious of the exalted and ever-blissful truth which is your real being. Through the infusion of compassion and love, let your heart be illumined and purified so that you can behold yourself as all the world. A narrowed and cramped heart is the cause of your misery and pain. Your liberation lies in your hands. God, who dwells in you, ever awaits to succor you. Seek his aid and fight with the enemy's lust, greed, and wrath. By the weapons of his grace and power, do not forget the Divine Master. He is all compassion and mercy. Feel his presence in you and everywhere about you, in all beings and creatures. Install him in your heart as the very embodiment of love. Compassion will then be a natural quality of your heart. The softened heart will then melt away in the sweetness of your immortal life, and all your actions will give out the veritable fragrance of kindness and love. Now your selfless life will always yield peace and joy to yourself and offer relief and delight to all in the world. Such a magnificent, glorious vision. Well, that's interesting, Ram. I had my place marked here, and he took it out. But he brought me right back to where I wanted to be, so his little play. This comes from Matthew 5:7. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And Paramahansa Yogananda's commentary on that. Mercy is a sort of fatherly heartache for the deficiency in child souls. The wise alone can be really merciful, for they look upon all wrongdoers as children who deserve sympathy, forgiveness, help, and guidance. Mercy is useless unless the fatherly heartache melts and expresses itself in an offering forgiveness and actual spiritual help in eliminating the error in an individual. The morally weak but willing to be good, the real sinner, the greatest transgressor against his own happiness, and the spiritually ignorant should obtain merciful help from the wise. Besides these, the physically decrepit and the mentally and spiritually weak all need merciful help from souls that are capable of rendering merciful help. Mercy denotes the capacity for being helpful. Therefore, only developed or qualified souls can be practically and mercifully useful. Souls who continuously develop themselves in every way and mercifully feel the lack of all-around development in others surely will melt the heart of God with compassionate sympathy and obtain his unending and helpful mercy. In other words, you must be merciful to yourself by making yourself spiritually qualified and must also be merciful to other deluded children of God if you want to receive divine mercy. Yesterday, we had our class on forgiveness. And if I'll tell a little story out of school, Ralph was thinking about, oh, I've taken that class already. I don't think I need to take it again. And his wife, as oftentimes wives do, serve to remind us and to humble us and said, no, you get with it and get, go. And he did. And I think you had a significant experience yesterday, didn't you? And it's interesting that we think we've heard the lessons. We know the principles. We know what it is that we should do. And yet, there are more and more layers for us to go through. And this is the great journey in life. This is what we're here to do, is to grow. And if we're not growing, then we have a real problem. When in our own pursuit of truth, of realization, of spiritual and personal growth, we find that we're up against obstacles, we're up against those things that make it difficult in order to grow, we oftentimes feel inadequate to the task. And sometimes we think, well, maybe I'm not doing any good at all. And I'd like to read to you from Mother Hamilton something that she once said. And you must think, because you seem to retrogress, that you are no longer on the path to God. Never think that you have fallen from grace in that sense. If your foot has slipped, surely you know that it is not the right thing to do. So pick yourself up and get going. But don't think constantly of sin. You ask forgiveness of God because you know you have gone against His law. But forget that sin and again put your attention upon God. I remember that Master told a man who had attained tremendously high realization in consciousness. And all of a sudden a woman who was most attractive appeared before him and tempted him, and he succumbed to the temptation. And this was a terrific thing for him because he felt that he had fallen from grace eternally. So one of the devotees who was listening to Master said, well, Master, isn't this a terrible thing? This man was lost to the kingdom of the heaven forever. Master said, no, my son, this is not so. The man picked himself up again, and he tried to rise once more to God. God is not unfeeling. He listened to him. He overcame his weakness and obtained his oneness with God. This is the great hope for all of us who are sinners. We cannot help but slip once in a while, no matter how pure we think we are or how hard we have tried, because we are in the human state. And this duality around us, which tempts us constantly, is a terrific thing to cope with. But we go through it day by day, not realizing, most of us, just exactly what we are accomplishing. We don't realize what we are accomplishing because we are oftentimes more mindful of the obstacles than we are in those hills that we have already climbed and achieved, and we are on to the next hill. And each hill gets a little steeper, a little more difficult, a little more technical. And so we always feel like we are learning, we are growing, but we are also very aware of how difficult it is and how much we're up against. But if we every once in a while turn around and look back over all the hills that we have already climbed and see how changed we are in our character by our constant striving, it doesn't mean that we did it perfectly every single time. But when we did it imperfectly and we slid back down the hill, we turned back around and we started climbing once again. If we never see the progress that we make, we can become discouraged in that sense. We can begin to think that I haven't changed at all. And this just simply isn't the truth when we're putting in the work, when we're really striving to become something different. It is right for us to see what it is that we would like to change about ourselves. But more importantly than that, you need to see the power of spirit, that purity that I was speaking about earlier, that you are imagining within your own heart, that strength. Where do you get your strength at? When you've run out of your own resources, when you've run out of your own strength, where do you turn to? Do you turn away from God? Do you turn away from the battle? And you just think to yourself, well, I guess that's just how I am. And you give up on yourself. Never, ever give up upon yourself. For that eternal purity is deep within you. And even if it's covered by layers of the past, that seem to obscure it and make it further away. Nevertheless, it is there, and if you call upon it with all sincerity, with all love, with all desire to grow beyond where you're at, grace will enter into your life. Now, it doesn't just always make things change in an instant. I remember, for my adult life, my first encounter with God. I had, early on, had a great faith and love for God, but that faded as world experiences entered into it. And I became an agnostic, and for a while I thought that science might hold all the answers, but after a while I realized science was extremely limited as well. And then I was left in a no man's land, so to speak. I didn't know what to have any faith in, other than I just knew that I was living, and that was about it. And through circumstances of the world, I had a great heartache. And it was a spiritual crisis. I didn't know it at the time. I wouldn't have had a name for it at the time. But it really took me over. And it made my heart so painful, it felt like it was cracking in two. And when they say a broken heart, I knew exactly what that meant. And it was past midnight, and it was one of those beautiful, warm summer nights. I was outside, and the sky was just covered in a blanket of stars. But I was in a complete state of misery, and I just didn't even feel like I could carry on any longer. I couldn't take the pain that I was in. And so I turned myself to God, and I said, God, I don't know if you exist, but if you do, if I've never needed you before, I need you now. Please help me. And in that moment, I experienced a complete release of all this pain. It was like 1,000 pounds was taken off that was pressing down on me. And it was thrown away. And I was in awe and wonder at what just happened. But you know, that wasn't the end of the story, because the pain the next day came back. It was gone for that night, and it was wonderful. And it showed me what was possible, what real spiritual freedom felt like. But I still had to go through all the things that I myself had created. And I had to face them, and I had to overcome them, and I had to find my strength. But I so oftentimes felt that I was alone. And if I could have just really taken the lesson that I broke through that feeling of isolation and aloneness in that nighttime, and I opened myself up to divine grace. Now, I wasn't that willing of a camper. I certainly didn't consider myself religious at the time. And wasn't exactly what I wanted to be doing with my evening time. But there I was. I was stuck with it. But what a great lesson, and what I considered a curse, was that pain continued on for many years. And it drove me, like a whip, onto the spiritual path, because that was the only way that I saw that there is any relief, that there is any resolution. And I didn't like it. I wanted to be what I thought of as normal at the time. Why can't I just live a normal life, kind of be like other people, seem to find happiness in things that other people find happiness in? But it wasn't to be for me. And I didn't like it. And what I considered as a curse at the time, I now consider as a great blessing. Because it made me unsatisfied with the world. I couldn't see any profit in it. I couldn't see where it was going to give me anything. And really, I saw that pursuing the spiritual path, coming to a state of realization, was the only thing that was going to be the resolution, but it came so slowly from my standpoint. You know, when you're in misery, moments can seem like an eternity. And when you're with God, you feel like that is also eternity. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? But when we feel that connection with God, when we feel that connection with our true self, we do, in truth, see it extending out as far as we can see from behind us and as far as we can in front of us. As we purify this mind, it begins to change us. We see things differently. I see things differently. And as I continued to purify this mind, gradually, that eternal self, what is in India called the Atman is that purity of soul, your high soul, your soul that is connected with God. And God is called Param Atman. Param is supreme, highest. And it is the self of God. And that Atman and Para Atman at some point are seen to merge and become as one. Now, to some, that would seem to be a sacrilege to say so. And yet it is the truth, and it is the truth that has been taught to us from saints and spiritual masters down from time immemorial. When Jesus said, "I and my Father are one," he was not claiming an exclusive province to that. Rather, he was articulating what he had experienced within his own self. And it even says in the 1 John, to everyone who had belief in him, gave he power to become sons of God, that you too are that. Now, son in this case isn't a male. It's just a child of God, maybe another way of saying it. But more than that, because the very stuff that your soul is made out of the very core, out of the very center of you, is God stuff. It is spirit. It is that pure light, that pure love, that peace that surpasses all understanding. It is everything that your heart desires. In the Vedas, it says that God is the fulfillment of your heart's desires. But as long as you turn your attention to this world and the things of this world, your heart will be hungry. It will be incomplete. It will never have its desires fulfilled. And isn't that the truth? You can have moments of pleasure. You can have moments of fulfillment. But predictably, they fade away. They don't last. And this is, in truth, a great grace that comes to us. It's a blessing, because if we are totally satisfied with this world, we would not seek the higher truth. So we are like a part of the puzzle who is seeking the completion of the puzzle, but we can never find it because we're looking in the wrong direction. I remember there's a television show, and at the beginning it showed, it was looking directly at the faces of these people who had binoculars, and they were looking off in a direction looking for a helicopter that was to arrive. And in the meantime, from the camera's viewpoint, you could see the helicopter approaching from behind them. And it got closer and closer, and finally they heard it, and they turned around, and they were all looking in the wrong direction. And this is the way that we are as souls. We are looking out through these five senses to the world and the things of the world to complete us, to make us know who we are and what we are. And all the time, right behind us, right inside of us, is the answer. But who takes the time? You know what meditation really is? Meditation is withdrawing the life force from your senses, from the afferent and efferent nerves that life force usually goes out through, and by that we perceive this world. Mother said a very interesting thing. She said that the vibration of life, prana, God, comes in through the what is called the mouth of God. It's at the base of the skull, at the back. And life energy comes in, and when you meditate deeply, you can feel that life force coming in. It's a very definite experience that you have. And I feel it continuously, and this sound of Om is there. And it comes in, and it's not an Om that you say with your mouth. It's a sound that you hear. It is the vibration of the motor of this universe, you might say. It is the power that gives life to everything and form to everything that is. And that it's feeding you constantly. So that Jesus said, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. This mouth of God is right within you, right within your own being. And the subtle life force comes in. And if it was withdrawn, it would result in what we call death. That this body would just become an empty shell of life. I remember the first time that I saw a dead body, it was my grandfather. And people would say, oh, he looks so good. He looks like he's sleeping. He didn't look like he was sleeping to me. True enough, he wasn't breathing and his pallor was a little different, although they had made him up in the nursing home or the funeral home. But to me, there is something very definite missing. Now, this may sound like an obvious thing, but to me, it struck me at the time. I was, I think, 14 years old at the time. But I recognized there's something missing here. And it was his soul. It was his life. It's something that was distinctly him. And true, the body was there, but now the body was an empty shell. And I could feel it. I not only saw it, but something was distinctly, on a feeling level, an intuitive level, different, radically changed. And so we know that if the life is withdrawn from this body just dissolves back into dust once again. What keeps you animated? So oftentimes we think, oh, it's food, it's breathing. We know that normally, if we don't have oxygen, if we don't have food, if we don't have water, we will die. These are physical mechanics of what keeps us alive. But what gives us life? When a baby comes out of the womb, it takes a breath. And when it takes a breath, did life just enter in when it took a breath? No. It's had life all the time that it's been developing in there. The soul has come and is identifying itself with that body. And is helping in the construction of that body. You know, there are many decisions that are made as the body is formed. It has the genetic material, the mother and the father. It has the environment of the mother as it grows. But there are patterns of that individual soul that are imprinting itself upon the development of that body itself. And so it affects the creation of that body. The subconscious patterns begins to imprint itself. And so if that body carries with it particular karma that requires the body to have either different strengths or different weaknesses, different things that it brings with itself, then it begins to imprint itself upon the formation that goes on within that body. It's a fascinating thing to see. And to see that soul attach itself to the body and then the development of the body. And anyone who's had particularly more than one child, but even one child will prove it, that child comes with a definite personality. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't come as a blank slate. And whatever its environment is kind of what it adopts. Not at all. It comes with the distinctness. Where did that personality come from? And of course, that individual that's coming as seemingly a very helpless babe is actually a soul that has had a long term of development and many, many lives. Yogananda talked about having memories. And he had memories of first coming into this world, and in his mind, he had so many different languages. Because he had spoken so many different languages through time. And he was getting this particular kind of Bengali kind of speech around him, and it took him a while to begin to recognize it. You think if you let a few hundred years go by, and you were a few hundred years previous, and you had even the English language with you, it sounds different, doesn't it? If we listen to Shakespearean speech, it sounds differently. And you can go from one part of England to another. When I first traveled to England, I went there, one, because it was the cheapest place for me to go when I was traveling. But the other was, theoretically, they spoke English there. But I was in places in England, I was quite convinced they weren't speaking English. I wasn't sure what they were talking, but it didn't sound English to me. So you can see how different it is and how you have to acclimatize yourself to not only the language, but food and habits and customs and everything. It's quite a task. And you're trying to learn the mechanics of this body. You have to teach this body all over again how to walk, how to speak, how to do all the most basic elementary functions. And so many years ago, when I was young, if I heard a child just, you know, those one of those screams from a child that just penetrates, and it was like fingernails on chalkboard to me. And then one day I thought, you know, what a rough transition this is, coming from the astral or the causal or the spiritual realms and then coming into this physical body, and suddenly this body is cold or it's tired or it's hungry. You're not used to that. It's a rough place. And then when that child screamed in that way, I thought, well, of course, poor thing. It's getting adjusted to this body, and sometimes we'd like to scream just like it. Only we've learned not to do that over time. Most of the time, anyway. So we come into this world, and it's a great journey. It's a great journey. And we acclimatize ourselves, and we adjust ourselves, but we always yearn for our spiritual home. One time I was lifted up, God lifted me up, and he showed me my previous experience to coming into this world and the family that I was with, and they were a very highly attuned spiritual family. And I came into this world, and I came into a particular family, and they were a good family. No problems that way. However, I never felt like they were my family. I felt like the stork had made some wrong turn, and getting me to the destination brought me to the wrong family. And when I sensed this family that I had been with beforehand, I realized I was constantly comparing them to this absolutely wonderful family from which I had come. And no wonder, they didn't come up to the same standards. And yet I realized that the difficulties that I had in growing up, the hard way that my father raised me, I think he saw having three sons more like a kind of boot camp than he did anything else. And we were all there to be trained and to learn our lessons. And it was reinforced with a fist and a hand if we didn't get it quick enough. And it was tough. But I saw that it gave me strength over time. I could take the things that this world had to deal. And when I, particularly when I discovered the spiritual strength in me, then that gave me the power to face these things of the world. And you have that same strength in you. You have that same power. So many times, we don't deal with ourselves. We don't deal with our past because we don't feel strong enough. We feel like there's a quagmire of feelings, and that they'll never get resolved. Sigmund Freud developed an idea, and he saw, when he investigated into the mind, he saw there that underneath so many of us, this veneer of civilization, as we might call it, was this seething, writhing id, these kind of impulses that were raw, weren't cultivated, weren't civilized. And he saw ourselves as ultimately trying to deal with so many of these raw emotions, raw feelings, raw impulses. And we sublimated and tried to work with them, and sometimes we didn't do so well, and they worked into neurosis. But that's as far as he went, you see. And he thought of, you just get better and better at trying to resolve the inner complexes. And through that, and through love, and through work, you became a happy person. But he didn't go far enough. He didn't go deep enough. Because underneath, true enough, there it is within our psyche, within our consciousness, there are these unresolved, very raw, very open kinds of feeling and impulses. But beneath that, going further, there is that pure light of being within you. And you are that. But when we try to meditate, what happens? All of these things, these nightmarish things at times, come bubbling up into the consciousness. I remember so well that sitting down for meditation, and that was the last place I wanted to be. The fears, the anger at times, the different kinds of feelings that would come up, the memories that would come up, and I would just want to run away. But somehow, something deep inside of me made me stick with it. And I didn't run away. I kept going back. And gradually, these things began to resolve. And when they would resolve themselves, I would discover that light within my own being. Now, my guru made that possible because she was a living manifestation of that light. Once I sat down, talk about those difficult-to-deal-with feelings. I had gone to see Mother at the time, and she was going through a tremendously difficult experience at the time, even though she had a state of full God realization. She is taking on things from this world, and she was taking it into her body and working it out through her body. It's a very strange thing that true spiritual masters can do, but it's the truth. But she had taken on so much that she had shingles that split her face down the middle. She looked like somebody with leprosy. I'd never seen somebody with leprosy other than pictures, but they were open, oozing sores. Her eye was so ready to explode that they had to sew some skin over the top of it so that it didn't explode. And I've never had shingles, but I've heard from people who have had shingles and said it's just the most painful thing that you can have. And it was just inhabiting half of her face. Hospital said it was the worst case they'd ever seen. She had had several strokes as well. So she is in really rough state. And when I saw her, I was just shocked because I had never... She was the most powerful, most intelligent, most spiritual person I had ever met in my life. And here she was reduced to almost nothing. And so I went home. What did I do? I sat on my meditation blanket. I took it to God. What is going on here? How can this happen? And so I sat for a long time, and finally I got calm inside. That's the first thing. And I put all that aside, but I was still with this question, what is going on? And suddenly, within my spiritual vision, it happens here at the point between the eyebrows, the ajna. It's where, when I'm giving this talk, my whole consciousness is lifted up to there. And that's why my eyes are closed, is because my whole attention is automatically riveted there at my third eye point. And I saw there my guru, Mother Hamilton, in this most beautiful light. She was that light. She's a living manifestation of that light. And that light went out in every direction as far as the eye could see, and in the spiritual vision, it could see a long way. So it filled up my entire spiritual vision, and she was beautiful, so beautiful, filled with this light. And she said to me, "Don't you know that I am now in my spiritual body?" And the vision lasted for some time, and I felt complete resolution to whatever happened to her physical body. That was not her spiritual body, is not her true self. And it helped me in so many ways. We all have a fear, just even as Siddhartha Gautama, before he became the Buddha. He had that fear of disease, old age, death. Those are the three things that are the great mystery and the great fears that we hold. And it drove him until he got his total and complete realization. And so when you are confronted with these things, and you take it not turning away from them, but turning inside, going for answers there, seeking out the truth. What is the truth? And when you seek that truth, the truth will be revealed. It may not happen in a minute. You have to stick with it. Sometimes I would take a question to God and it didn't come back as an answer in a minute or an hour or a day or a week or a year. Sometimes it was years. And then the answer would come. And it's not because the answer wasn't there all along. It was. I wasn't ready to receive the answer. And when I was, then the answer was there. I thought I was ready. I wanted the answer desperately. But it wasn't there. It wasn't time yet. I had to do more. I had to purify this mind, this body, this soul. And so if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to do what it takes to purify your mind, your body, and your soul until it clears the deck of everything that is not of the Spirit, not of God, then you will be lifted up into this state of realization when all of that is cleared away. Now you may think, how can I ever do that? There's too much. And it's true. Jesus himself, in talking about this, said, unless the days were shortened, no man could do it. So grace very definitely comes in. It's the power, the intelligence that resides within you. And it's not just you working by yourself. You could never do it on your own. The ego cannot transcend the ego. It takes light to transcend it. And that light exists in you. In fact, you wouldn't be called to a spiritual path at all if you were not already receiving the grace of that light. So you open yourself in greater measure to that light. You give yourself to it. This is a universal path. It doesn't belong just to one group or one religion or one movement. It is for every individual all around this world. And by whatever name they call it, whether they say God or Allah, whether they say Brahma, or they call it Nirvana, it's all the same, you see. Because that state of realization, the Buddha didn't want to, so to speak, taint his teachings with old concepts. So he gave it its Nirvana. But that's a Sanskrit word. People within the Hindu religion understood it. He just said, what I have experienced transcends everything that you think of as a god. And so I have no name for it, really. You can't name it, you can't describe it until you experience it. And when you experience it, you won't be able to name it, you won't be able to describe it either. Although we give it names and we try to describe it in order to inspire all individuals everywhere to discover the great truth, the great truth, and it's residing right within you. So this is the great journey in your life. And I make a hearty invitation to you to take your courage in your hand and to start down that road and to do everything in your power to give yourself the tools, the ability, the strength, the courage to follow that light. And if you do that, you will discover this great truth that will give you total freedom and bliss and joy. You will find that power to be forgiving towards others. You will live that life where you serve this world. You know, sometimes we think that the path is so far from us or that we don't carry it into our everyday life. But whatever you do in life, give it as a service to God, you see. If it's what you do for a living, fine. We all need to live. We need a shelter. We need clothes. We need basic essentials and so on. There's no harm in receiving for what you have given. That is the balance of this world. And it's right and it's good. But in your soul, in your heart, what you're doing is you are loving and serving God in that person. When Mother Teresa of Calcutta talked about her work, she was serving her Christ in every person that she met. And she wasn't out to convert them. She was out to serve them. And so if they were dying in disease, she would pick them up in her own arms and she would carry them and she would clean their bodies and she would give them clean sheets. She may not be able to do anything for the body in terms of making it well. But she could give that person dignity and a clean place and what she could give in terms of love and service in order to ease their passing. And so in whatever way you feel called to serve, you see, you serve with your heart. You serve as if it is God in that form who you are serving. You love them. And when you do that, it changes you. It changes you. But you have to be pursuing your spiritual path. I've told the story about a co-worker that I had at a mental health service, and she said, oh yeah, I used to do the Mother Teresa thing in a very dismissive kind of a way. And I knew what she meant, that she tried with everything she had to serve everybody, but she did it from ego, you see. She wasn't able to sustain it. I used to do it. So I asked her, I said, oh, like Mother Teresa then, did you start your day every day with 2 hours of prayer and meditation? Oh, no, I didn't do that. She wasn't filling her fuel tanks up in order to continue to give. So when she gave, she was doing it out of ego. She ran out of gas. And I've seen people do this. And it's not pretty when they run out of gas. They turn on the very people that they serve. And they start to abuse them many times. Because they've got nothing left and they blame the other person. So you have to fill your fuel tank first. You yourself have to receive before that you can give. And so you go to God first. That's where you see, receive. That's where the power comes from, you see. And when you do this, it will change your life. Live a life of service. Whatever God has put in front of you, accept it as for your good as well as the good of the person you're serving. Don't resent it. Don't come in with fear or anger or loathing. See the individual as God. And it will change you. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. So let us all enter into this great journey, into the discovery of who and what we really are. And come face to face with that divine life. And when you do, it will set you free. It will set you free. And that is the truth. Carla, would you lead us in a chant, please? Words. Anybody who wants words, there's some words here.
Master's chant, I am the bubble make me the sea, and I'll develop it before.
So do thou, my Lord, so do thou, my Lord, thou and I never apart, thou and I never apart, wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So do thou, my Lord. Thou and I never apart. Thou and I never apart. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Soak me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So do thou, my Lord. Thou and I never apart. Thou and I never apart. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Make me the sea, oh, make me the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. Wave of the sea, dissolve in the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. I am the bubble, make me the sea. So do thou, my Lord. So that notion comes from the Vedas that we're like waves up on the ocean. Try to cut the ocean off from the wave, though. The wave doesn't do so well, does it? But when the wave collapses and merges into the sea, that's what it's like when our individuality collapses, allows itself, surrenders itself to the sea, dissolves into the sea, and becomes one with that ocean. These are wonderful concepts. They've been taught for thousands of years. But as Jesus says, who has the eyes to see and the ears to hear? And so oftentimes they fall on deaf ears and blind eyes. People hear the words, but they don't really hear it. They can picture the concepts, but they don't really see it. If we did, we would go running for the divine goal because of what it promises. So will you please pray with me? Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection,
surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. I bow to the light within you. And may that divine light ever guide you, protect you, and lead you to the ultimate consummation in which self becomes the Almighty Self, the Divine Self, and merges into the Divine Being. Make it so.